Afro Verdict, brought to you by Sputnik Africa.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Afro Verdict podcast. I'm your host Victor Anakin, and I want to bring you the latest updates on two pressing issues that have captured the attention of the international community. Today, we'll be discussing the ongoing genocide case filed by South Africa against Israel at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, as well as the US-led attack on Yemen. First, let's dive into the ICJ case. South Africa has accused Israel of committing genocide against the Palestinian people, citing evidence of excessive force, destruction of infrastructure, and restrictions on freedom of movement. Israel has denied these allegations, stating that its actions are necessary for self-defense. As the world grapples with the ongoing conflict in the Middle East, the United States and its allies, including the UK, have launched airstrikes against targets in Yemen in response to attacks on ships destined for Israel. The strikes, which targeted the Houthis' UAVs, uncrewed surface vessels, land attack cruise missiles, coastal radars, and air surveillance capabilities, were ordered and monitored by US Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin from a hospital. Dr. Youssef Al-Hadri, spokesperson of the Yemeni Ministry of Health, told Sputnik that US-British raids resulted in the death and injury of 11 people, as well as the destruction of some government offices and buildings. The US President, Joe Biden, confirmed the attacks, stating that they were intended to disrupt and degrade the Houthis' capabilities to endanger marinas and threaten global trade. The UK Defence Ministry also confirmed its involvement in the strikes using Typhoon fighter jets and Paveway 4 guided bombs. In response to the attacks, Houthi forces launched retaliatory attacks on US and UK warships. Russia has called on an urgent meeting of the UN Security Council over the strikes, while Saudi Arabia urged parties to the conflict to exercise restraint and avoid escalation. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch has criticized the Biden administration's transfer of arms to Israel, stating that it violated US domestic laws and policies that require recipients of weapons to abide by international law. The airstrikes come as Israel continues its military campaign in Gaza, with reports of an IDF attack on a residential building in Khan Yunis. The IDF's actions have been condemned by a member of the Houthis' political bureau, who accused the US and its allies of trying to divert attention from the ongoing genocide in Gaza with ill-conceived airstrikes. The ongoing conflicts in both Yemen and Gaza have resulted in significant loss of life and displacement of civilians. As tensions continue to escalate in these regions, it is crucial that all parties involved exercise restraint and work towards finding peaceful solutions to these complex issues. Well, to analyze both of these situations, let's welcome our guest, Dr. Oscar van Heerden, to hear his opinion on these topics. Dr. Oscar van Heerden, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for African Diplomacy and Leadership at the University of Johannesburg. Doc, welcome back to the AfroVerde podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you with me here today. So the beginning of the year shot off with quite an interesting and dreadful start, as on Friday, 12th of January 2024, the USA launched strikes together with the UK, while at the same time Anthony Blinken declared that the USA and Middle East were ready to work for peace in the region. Don't you see this as a form of two-faced politics on Washington's part?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We see this kind of thing all the time. You know, the what is being said is not what is being done. For example, you look at a good example that is currently taking place at the International Court of Justice, where, you know, the Israelis are saying that their policies are stating that they have to take great care of civilians, that they're not targeting civilians. But we see exactly the opposite that's happening in this conflict. And so I fear it's the same here with regards to the United States of America. They are saying that they are not going to want to broaden this war and so forth, but then we see these attacks without consultation for that matter.
Yeah, and these coalition strikes could further aggravate the situation in the Middle East. For example, Iran has already condemned the attack as violation on Yemen's sovereignty. Can we expect the conflict to spread to other countries?
Well, I suspect so, to be honest, because if you're now going to have these surprise attacks, already a number of countries in the region, including Saudi Arabia, has expressed concern with these attacks. Iran has objected to it. And so it's quite evident that if there's going to be a continuation of these kinds of attacks, then, of course, the war is going to escalate.
Which regions do you think would be sort of engulfed in the spread of the conflict if one was to take place?
Well, I think that it will the more immediate region is the Middle East. I think Egypt. I think, of course, Saudi Arabia is going to come into the equation since they have been in Yemen all these years, as well as Iran. And as you know, there has been these peace offerings between Iran and Saudi Arabia, facilitated by the Chinese. But even that is now hanging in the balance.
Thanks, Prof. The price of oil has already risen, and the Red Sea and Arabian Sea will remain closed to ships affiliated with Israel. What consequences will the escalation of this conflict have for international trade, and who will benefit from this situation?
So I think that, you know, that you're making a good point about the oil prices. I think this is going to negatively impact on the oil yet again. You know, when there's uncertainty, it negatively impacts on markets and on services and goods. And I think that one of the resources that is going to come under pressure is the price of oil. And I think it's going to be and have a negative impact just generally. You know, ironically, the United Kingdom is using this attacks as an excuse to say that they don't want there to be any tampering with international trade. But the reality is that now that they have actually conducted these attacks in Yemen, it is now furthering hampering international trade.
I think it should be noted that Joe Biden has violated the U.S. Constitution, specifically Article 1. He failed to notify Congress of the start of this assault and the international stage as well. Washington and London also failed to notify the U.N. Security Council. Why are the United States and its allies acting with impunity, breaking international law as well as the rules that they themselves have established?
Well, this, again, as I say, you know, what they say they do and what they do is two completely different things. I think it's very concerning. It is true that President Biden was supposed to run this past Congress. Congress specifically made this an understanding if you want to go into a conflict situation, precisely because the last time they did this, they found themselves in a 10-year, a decade-long war in Afghanistan and so forth. And so Congress tried to avoid this. As to why the Biden administration decided to not consult and follow proper channels, that's anyone's guess, but one can only and believe that he thought perhaps that they were not going to give him the go-ahead. And that's why he gave the order and worked with Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin to actually pull this off.
And how do you think Joe Biden's move will affect the upcoming elections in the States?
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is that, as we know, the United States of America is a war economy. When there's war, it's good for the economy. And that's why the Biden administration wanted to also prolong the conflict in Ukraine, because as they go towards November and the economy is overheating and so forth, it's good for the economy. And so I'm not surprised that yet again, there's now another fight being picked.
Based on what you said now, do you think, if we were to speculate, the U.S. could invest into other conflicts around the world?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the saber rattling that we are seeing with China around Taiwan, we're seeing this proxy war in Ukraine with Russia, and now they are picking a fight with the Yemenis rebels and so forth. So indeed, I wouldn't be surprised if we are going to see one or two additional hotspots that involves the United States and the UK.
Well, the escalation of this conflict in the Middle East simply deprives Ukraine not only of international public attention, but also of funding. Volodymyr Zelensky is heading to Davos for the International Economic Forum in order to attract the attention of his Western sponsors. Is Ukraine's fate sealed, or will the West continue to stretch out Ukraine's inescapable end?
Well, there's two things here. The one is obviously weapons and ammunition, and I think the collective West is running dry on providing additional weapons and ammunition. And this is a big problem. And the second thing is obviously money. And I think that the European Union has made it quite clear that they are going to continue at best they can to provide money to the Zelensky administration. But as to whether they can afford to give more weapons and ammunition, this is a big question mark because they themselves are beginning to deplete their stockpiles. And so I think that Ukraine's fate is sealed. I don't think that Zelensky is going to be very successful in Davos. There might be one or two that is still going to try and support him. But I suspect the world is already quite tired of this conflict with Russia. And I think the sooner they accept that their objectives have not been met, and that meaning that the implosion of Russia, I think slowly but surely the support for Ukraine is going to wane completely.
Prof, thanks a lot. Now quickly, Alain Corvet, Independent International Strategy Advisor, Colonel of the French Army, former advisor to the Commanding General of the United Nations Force in Lebanon, and former International Relations Advisor to the Ministries of Defense and the Interior. He would also like to provide his insight into the U.S.-Yemen issue. Take a quick listen.
The United States, like Israel, has never respected international law in its military interventions. And I would even add that the United States is not respecting its own constitution, because President Biden, while the executive should have asked Congress for its approval before launching this attack on Yemen. And this is not the first time. It was the same thing with Iraq. The attack was carried out without the agreement of Congress. So they don't respect international law, and they don't even respect their own constitution. The United States is perfectly capable, with cruise missile bombardments, ballistic missile bombardments, and all the sophisticated weaponry at its disposal, of dealing very hard blows to Yemen and weakening Yemen. But they cannot destroy Yemen, especially as the global situation is evolving against the United States of America, which, given its total support for the Israeli army's massacre in Palestine, is now being criticized in a huge part of the world, including the United States, where there are increasingly frequent demonstrations denouncing its policy of unilateral support for Israel. So these attacks on Yemen have to be seen in the context of the end of the total domination of the American hegemony over the world. And even within the Atlantic camp, it is clear that the traditional allies of the United States of America, at least within NATO, are not taking part in this coalition against Yemen, apart from the British. But the British have other options. So there is a tipping point that is taking place, which means that this attack on Yemen could deal the Yemenis some very hard blows, that's for sure. But I don't see a possible victory for the United States. Far from it. In fact, I think that in a statement, Biden said that he had stopped the strikes and was ready to resume them if the Houthis continued to prevent shipping in the Red Sea. I think that's already an announcement that they'd like it to stop. What is happening in The Hague at the moment today and since yesterday is also very important. It's clear that most of the world's countries are coming together to support South Africa's call to condemn Israel, and not just to condemn Israel, but to demand a ceasefire in Gaza. The world is moving to denounce the actions of Israel and at the same time the actions of the United States of America. So the world is calling for peace, for an end to the military actions of Israel and the United States. So I think that the United States is going to be obliged, and I'm sure that they will take into account the fact that they are not supported by the majority of the world as a whole in this action.
All right, now moving over to the genocide case filed by South Africa against Israel. For those that aren't aware of what's going on, here's part of the case made by His Excellency Vusimuzi Madonsela, South Africa's ambassador to the Kingdom of the Netherlands, at the ICJ in The Hague.
Madam President, distinguished members of the court, it is an honor and a privilege for me to appear before you today on behalf of the Republic of South Africa. I wish to express my gratitude to the court for convening this hearing on the earliest possible date to entertain South Africa's request for the indication of provisional measures in this matter. In our application, South Africa has recognized the ongoing Nakba of the Palestinian people. through Israel's colonization since 1948, which has systematically and forcibly dispossessed, displaced, and fragmented the Palestinian people, deliberately denying them their internationally recognized inalienable right to self-determination and their internationally recognized right of return as refugees to their towns and villages in what is now the state of Israel. We are also particularly mindful of Israel's institutionalized regime of discriminatory laws, policies and practices designed and maintained to establish domination, subjecting the Palestinian people to apartheid on both sides of the Green Line. Decades-long impunity for widespread and systematic human rights violations has emboldened Israel in its recurrence and intensification of international crimes in Palestine. At the outset, South Africa acknowledges that the genocidal acts and omissions by the State of Israel inevitably form part of a continuum of illegal acts perpetrated against the people, Palestinian people, since 1948. The application places Israel's genocidal acts and omissions within the broader context of Israel's 75-year apartheid, 56-year occupation, and 16-year siege imposed on the Gaza Strip, a siege which itself has been described by the director of UNRWA affairs in Gaza as a silent killer of people. As the Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination warned on December 21st, hate speech and dehumanizing discourse targeted at Palestinians is raising severe concerns regarding Israel and other states' parties' obligation to prevent crimes against humanity and genocide in the Gaza Strip. This warning has been followed by a succession of warnings, including by 37 United Nations special rapporteurs, of the failure of the international system to mobilize to prevent genocide in Gaza. Today, we are joined in court by representatives of the Palestinian state, the Palestinians who work in the field of human rights, including residents of Gaza, who were in Gaza just a few days ago. They are some of the lucky ones who managed to get out of Gaza. Their future and the future of their fellow Palestinians who are still in Gaza depend on the decision this court will make on this matter.
Dr. van Heerden, back to you. So what do you think are the prospects of this genocide case against Israel filed by South Africa at the ICJ?
Look, I mean, the truth of the matter is that if international law is applied and the courts stay within the ambit of the law, then I think they are going to find in favor of the application, in favor of South Africa, and that would send a very strong message to an Israeli government that has largely been not held accountable and has gotten away with the breaking of international law and international humanitarian law. But unfortunately, I must say that these things are often not decided within the ambit of the law. It's not about the law. It's not about morality. It's politics. And so I suspect that the court might want to find one or two technical reasons as to why they are not going to find in favor of South Africa. But I want to say South Africa has certainly put a very strong case forward at the International Court of Justice.
Yeah, and let's now speculate, if South Africa's case does go through, what can the implications of it be for Israel?
Well, the implications is fairly simple. I think that Israel is going to ignore it. They are not going to necessarily comply with the ceasefire. The matter will then be referred to the United Nations Security Council, where we are going to yet again see the U.S. Vetoing whatever resolution comes out of that.
And do you think the U.S. will find itself in a position to muster enough support for the veto move, or are its forces perhaps stretched too far and wide between all the conflict zones across the world?
I don't think that the U.S. is going to get the necessary support, but they don't care about that. You know, for them, this is a question of supporting one of their strongest allies in a region that has always been hostile. So I think that it's going to be a difficult one, but they are going to veto it nonetheless.
On January the 12th, Israel responded to South Africa's genocide case at the ICJ. What was your opinion on the argumentation of both sides? How convincing were the statements made by Israel and South Africa, respectively?
Well, I mean, I think the South Africans put up a very, very good case. They've analyzed it very well. They've responded to all the things that is within the Convention on Genocide. But the truth of the matter is, that, you know, currently, if you listen to the Israelis are trying to use self-defense as a defense. They are using the issue of that they are the victim. And as far as I'm concerned, they are also constantly telling lies in terms of what is encapsulated within their documents, policies, and so forth. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's up to the judges.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Let's hope they make the right decision. Look, Prof, and my last question, what divisions among global players has South Africa's lawsuit exposed?
There's so much. There's so many. I mean, you know, we've already seen that a number of countries, numerous countries, have come out in support of the application, in support of South Africa. And so I think that this is going to have ramifications either way, regardless of the outcome of the court.
All right, Dr. Oscar van Heerden, thanks once again for joining me today on the AfroVerde podcast. Dear listeners, thank you for tuning in. Let's bid Dr. van Heerden farewell, but I'm sure we'll see him again.
Thank you very much, Victor.
And here's another opinion on the ICJ hearing from Professor Adriaan Nikes, Professor of International Relations at the People's Friendship University of Russia.
The chances of South Africa's complaint being successful are very slim, and it must be understood that Israel has received all the possible support from the Americans, the British, Westerners in general. Therefore, Israel feels encouraged in this impunity, which is currently happening, unfortunately, very terrible. The chances of success are very slim because Israel knows that they will challenge the court's ability to adjudicate on this matter. So, this is just the beginning of a tug of war that has started between the two parties, that is to say, between South Africa and Israel.
Well, once again, thank you for tuning in, everyone. Let's pray for the safety of civilians in the hotspots of the Middle East and hope for quick cessation of hostilities. For developments regarding these conflicts, make sure to follow the updates provided by Sputnik Africa in the Telegram channel, TikTok account, and other social media. For easy access, feel free to download the Sputnik Africa application. It will save you much time. To check out the other episodes of AfroVerdict, rewind on popular podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Deezer, Pocket Casts, AfriPods, Castbox, as well as Podcast Addict. Enjoy the weekend, everyone, and you'll hear from me next week.
AfroVerdict, brought to you by Sputnik Africa.